Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Steve Rosenblum.
We suck, so your self-quarantine doesn't have to.
Mark Grody.
I think there will be lasting derivatives of this once we get through it, and hopefully we will. With minimal damage, that people will be more aware, honestly, of washing their hands and
good thing.
And apparently wiping.
They suck, so you don't have to.
They can do what they have to do. They know what they have to do. Now they don't have any problem getting it done.
Founding members of the WB Club.
Wake and they come on.
Where's Toby?
So I'm practicing, you know, social distancing, and I have a few tips for everybody, you know, no sharing pipes or joints, things like that.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK. Saturday Suckage, we're right here for you. The post-Hanukkah, pre-Christmas, our holiday edition. We'll be rolling out all of our total catalog of holiday songs. Me, Steve Rosenblum, him, Mark Grody, broadcasting live from Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. 3 hours of Saturday Suckage like it ought to be, and hopefully enough to last for the next 3 weeks when they've kicked us off the air. Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, Steve. Great to hear your voice. Always is on a Saturday morning at 11:03, December 19, 2020, as time runs out in 2020. Thank God. And we are after, it's pretty amazing that after the sky was falling on the Bears and its fans, it is now relevant at least two more times. I don't know, but it's all about this Minnesota game. We hate hearing it, but we are truly in a one game at a time scenario because it's sudden death right now for the Bears.
It won't totally mathematically eliminate them if they lose to the Vikings, but for all intents and purposes, it will, and it'll restore what some of us think was just such a fraud perpetrated on football last week, where the people believing that something good happened last week against a beat-up Texans team that was horrible by any standards, one of the worst in the league, one of the worst defenses in the league. And I guess the barometer is they're going to be playing defenses nearly as bad as that the rest of the way. Not quite as bad, but that's the way you can only play the teams in front of you. And in the Bears' case, you can only lose to the teams in front of you. And
how about
is,
this?
There is
a, that
yes.
was a that that was a measuring stick game for the Bears. They're not that bad.
They're not. They're not. And so, how good are they?
Well, I think we found out from. I think they're exact. They probably are a case of a team whose record is precisely indicative of what they are, right? One game under 500. That's about the Bears, isn't it? Because they had this great 5-1 start, and then they did this horrible, the losing streak was worse than the winning streak was good. Let's face it. That was a torturous six-game losing streak where so many things happened. So many, like, everything came undone at some point in time during that. There were injuries. There was quarterback malfunction. There was defensive malfunction. Like, you name it, and it came undone. Everybody questioned suddenly the coach and the future of the general manager. And just everything got questioned. Like, the entire organization was put through this complete spin cycle of questioning everything, except for, ironically, if you go back to 2018, the kicker. The kicker thrived throughout the six-game losing streak.
Of all things.
Of all things, man.
Of all things.
Right? I mean, so that's where we are, bud. I mean, I think... Would you agree or disagree that 6-7 is about, like, sometimes your record is not indicative of who you are? In the Bears' case, it is.
I think it's right there. I think the idea of compare losing to Detroit with beating Houston. It is a matter of degrees. They're worse than Detroit. But they can beat Houston that was all beat up and look at that. The Bears chose the right quarterback, even though they chose the wrong quarterback, and their coach is guilty of coaching malpractice every time something like last Sunday happens. So I don't know. If that's the case, what does that tell you? Just that the Bears are wildly inconsistent, that you cannot trust them, they're unreliable. They deserve what exactly? If they can lose to Detroit and blow a big lead, and they can beat Houston like that to make people sound like they're on psychedelics. Where are we with that? Is that 6-7 and just living week to week? Is that how it goes?
Yeah, I mean, there's no predicting. It's like even Vegas can't predict Bears and Vikings are going to, right? I mean, they've got Minnesota's a 3-point favorite, which basically means it's an even game because you give 3 points to the home team, right? So, yeah, it's impossible to predict. You could definitely have hope, I mean, because the Bears are unpredictable. But that hope can be in a cynical sense, too.
Okay, so let's review this. Because of the unpredictability and just because football is generally stupid when viewed through the Bears' prism, let's start with this. One of the three best running backs in the league, arguably the best, Dalvin Cook, is dominated by the Bears. He averages 2.8 yards per carry in the four games that the Bears have played against him. They own a game-changing running back, all right? And they did until Akeem Hicks got hurt, and so the most valuable person on the Bears is the guy who keeps Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks healthy. That is absolutely it. So then this Bears team gets Kirk Cousins in a national game on national TV where he sucks. He's just an embarrassment. And Kirk Cousins, on third down against that Bears defense, completes 10 of 11 passes for 149 yards, two TDs. In fact, 7 of his 10 completions went for first downs or touchdowns. That's Kirk Cousins, who did it on an island game, national TV, when he sucks against them. And now you have that version of whatever Kirk Cousins is going to be going against a secondary that will be without Buster Skrine. He's still in concussion protocol. He's out. And questionable is the way that Jalen Johnson is limited, a guy who has shoulder injury, a guy who is a rookie but who has played with a lot of moxie, and a guy who to me looks like he has a very short memory, which you need out there on the corner. So Kirk Cousins coming off a bit of confidence against the Bears in a low-scoring game, and he was the difference in a lot of ways. Make us feel better. Make Bears fans feel better about the secondary, Mark.
Well, I suppose you could say here's one way to spin it. If Jalen Johnson doesn't play, he was the one who allowed, for the most part, the Minnesota rookie receiver, Justin Jefferson, to get close to, or I don't remember the exact number, right around 130 yards. I think it was 8 catches, 130 yards for Justin Jefferson. So, you know, maybe it's better off with somebody else on Justin Jefferson. I actually don't believe what I'm saying right now.
You're a Duke Shelley fan, right?
I do like Duke Shelley. But, no, that's like you still want Jalen Johnson in there. He is still by far your best option on the outside covering somebody like Justin Jefferson. I don't have a great feeling about Jalen Johnson playing in this game, and that goes back to watching him on the sideline and when he hurt that right shoulder, and then he's questionable, like you said, but he didn't practice once this week. So that is a bad sign. So you could be depending on somebody like Duke Shelley or Kendall Vildor. And yeah, they did. I am a fan, and they did comport themselves well, but Jalen Johnson's better. So, and Buster Skrine is better at this point. So it's hard to make a case other than you hope that a team, a defensive coordinator, a secondary coach, a linebacker, all the defensive coaches have adjusted from the first game, in which, yes, they lost 19-13. I think that more of the adjustments have to come with the Bears' offense from game to game, because they only scored 6 points on offense in that first game against Minnesota. Remember, they had the Cordarrelle Patterson 103-yard kickoff TD return, which would be nice and would come in handy again, although I think Mike Zimmer would probably, like, walk out of the stadium if that occurred.
I think
he would spontaneously
combust right there on national TV. That would just be it. Bud Grant would come back to coach the rest of the Viking season.
Yeah, I think so. So I think that it really, you got to put together a better offensive game plan this time around, put more points on the board, and I think that we're seeing signs anyway. I don't want to get carried away with the offense and everything that's being said, but you're seeing signs of a better, more sturdy offense for the Bears.
Okay, one thing that protects that secondary would be a pass rush. And you saw it last week after spending months wondering where it was going to be. Khalil Mack did whatever he was able to do in all his Khalil Mackness. So is that a one-time thing? Is there reason to just to believe it, or is there reason to think that's a one-off? Mack has been listed as questionable, but that really doesn't matter with him. He's just a guy who shows up, he shows up to play, but then how well he plays and the fact that everything revolves around him and Robert Quinn sucks, then if Kirk Cousins has time to throw, then that secondary is in trouble if they don't have time to throw. So how much do you believe was that pass rush was a function of the Houston Texans sucking to high hell, or the Bears' pass rush actually improving and being able to do something against real teams?
I do think that it had a lot to do with Houston. I mean, you could see, like, again, watching Khalil Mack on the sideline, he had figured something out against his competition that week in that offensive line. So did Roquan Smith. So did Chuck Pagano. And, you know, good for them. They exploited it. But, yeah, I would say it was big-time function of Houston's ineptitude in this case. The problem I've seen with Robert Quinn is just watching him, and who knows, maybe he's got a foot injury because that's been brought up, but it's like he's one move and out. You know, it's like, okay, if that move doesn't work, he's down, and that's it. I haven't seen, like, the ferocious competitor that I know Robert Quinn is, and I don't know what that is a function of, but it's like one move and he's out. It was good to see, like, Khalil Mack did not appear to be favoring anything in the game last week, but yeah, I mean, Houston just was not good. So I don't know that you could depend on repeating that and seeing another 6 or 7 sack performance this week against Minnesota.
Well, there's a shame. That there's a damn shame, because that's what they're going to need. I don't know what to trust about the offense, other than I don't trust Mitch Trubisky any one week to the next. And this coaching staff, as things played out, I want to go back to last week, and so much has played out, but when you have David Montgomery running for 80 yards on the first play and getting only 11 carries the rest of the game, and we had talked about this last Saturday, Houston was a horrible rushing defense. And if you wanted to keep Deshaun Watson off the field, if you wanted to ensure victory, you keep running the ball and you keep giving it to David Montgomery because that's what you got him for. Second effort, yards after contact, just the ability to push and push and push. And we saw a variety of things from him, but we saw him only get the ball for 11 carries after he ran 80 yards on their first play, which confirmed to me what I said last week, what I've been saying for months, that Matt Nagy and his coaching staff don't recognize the game that's in front of them. I know they scored a bunch of points, but they don't know how to win. And against a real team, that will be a problem. And I don't know if there's any sense that they've wised up. Do you get any sense from what you heard this week that there is a greater hewing to the running game and keeping those two dangerous Vikings receivers off the field against that beat up secondary? That's another way to protect Jalen Johnson or whoever's back there, is to keep the ball and run it and pick up first downs. Is there any sense that they may be leaning that way?
First of all, I was actually okay for once last week with the Bears not handing the ball. I was probably the only one who wasn't incensed that the Bears
I'm incensed didn't... that you weren't incensed.
I know. They put 36 points up on the board. There were other things that were exploited in that game. Allen Robinson was onto something with a weak secondary last week. Mm-hmm. He had 9 catches for 123 yards. Cole Kmet was onto something with his 4 catches in 41 yards. So there were other things that were actually working. And so in last week's case, I had zero problem with the Bears doing what they did in the second. Like, I didn't notice it. And I always wonder, too, are people, I know you probably are, but are people that are watching and that become enraged after the game, when they're actually watching in real time, are they really mad when a pass is completed to Allen Robinson that the ball was not handed off to David Montgomery? Or are they only incensed when it gets regurgitated back to them in the statistics and we're all pounding the Bears because they only, you know, had 8 rushes in the second half or whatever the case was? Are they truly mad, or are they just saying, oh my God, I didn't realize that. The numbers pop off the page. You only gave the ball. Well, they scored 36 points and they had other things working. So in this case, in that particular game, I was okay with it. Now, on to your other question about have they talked about getting the ball to David Montgomery more this week? So Bill Lazor was asked the question, and you know, he of course was regurgitated the number, because everybody's been just completely obsessed with that. And he said, it's really not about numbers, and we don't really think about that during the game. Even though Matt Nagy said that ideally they would like to get David Montgomery the ball 15 to 20 times per game. So they, in other words, they didn't say anything this week about trying to get David Montgomery the ball more, but I do think if the game plays out that way, they will. It just happened to be, again, back to Houston, a bad team. Everything was working, and they didn't have to keep on giving the ball to David Montgomery.
Right. Well, two things. One is Montgomery didn't – he was held out with a concussion in the first game against the Vikings, in which they lost, and they didn't run much at all. But also, I think I don't think people are incensed when Allen Robinson catches a pass or Cole Kmet catches a pass. That Cole Kmet is just – he looked like a beast on that one particular – the one play everybody will remember from that if you watched it and said, yeah – that's the guy they drafted. More of that, right?
I want him.
Right. Well, more of that. But I think this is when people get upset, is when they're in the second half, the game's won. You just want it to get over with, and you see them throwing passes and eating up no clock time. They just, it's three and outs, and they can't even eat up 2 minutes of clock time because they keep throwing passes, and they're using it seems like, to make Mitch believe in himself or make other people believe in Mitch. and you really need to just win the game. One thing Mitch needs to do, well, obviously he needs to learn to read defenses, but he needs to know how to win the game. But you're dealing with a coaching staff that shows it doesn't know how to win games when it's time to do that. And you can go back to Nagy's coach and calling plays for that, for the Chiefs in that playoff game they lost, and the way he just soiled the bed in the second half. So I think that's when it happens, when you see those three and outs. You go, oh, seriously, you have to do this with a guy who can tear up their, can run through them? So I think that's when it happens. We'll discuss this in more depth. We need to welcome people to the show. He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. We will try to suck for the next 3 weeks that we won't be on the end of Hanukkah, the beginning of Christmas. And we are going to, our guest list looks like this. We're going to talk with Jay Zawoski after this break. The Score's own Jay Zawoski, big time author, all in capital letters. The Hawks did some stuff this week that I think the only reason you understand it is money. We'll see what Jay thinks. And the NHL is about to do something that will get the Hawks another high chance at a high draft pick. They are about to realign their divisions, and we'll see just how bad things will get for the Blackhawks. That's at 11:25. At noon, Rob Schaefer will be here, NBC Sports Chicago. He will be talking Bulls. They played another game. We saw Lauri Markkanen showed up. We'll see if we can believe that or not. And 1 p.m., we'll talk with Mark Potash of the Sun-Times. We'll talk more Bears the way Mark Grody does. Okay, Bears. Mark, should we do that? Take a break and bring...
Everything you just said sounds like... I mean, I got my scale of 1 to 10 here. That's a 10, buddy. That's a 10.
It is. Plus, we're going to do what Mark heard. We will gather all that stuff and give you a better idea of what you might see tomorrow, what Mark heard this week at Hallis Hall. We will do What Are You Doing, Wegner? And we will roll out our Christmas Hanukkah song catalog. This is our last chance to do it in 2020. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He is Mark Grody. This is Saturday Suckage. Thanks for being here. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
As they say in hockey, Let's do that hockey.
Let's do that hockey and let's do that new walk-up music. The ever-changing tastes of the eclectic Jay Zawoski. Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenholm. He's Mark Brody. This is Saturday Suckage. And we are going to welcome Jay Zawoski on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Jay, come tell us what the Hawks have done by making Stan Bowman the boss of Stan Bowman. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing wonderfully. I really enjoyed the Charmin song about my butt. That was really fun. I like that a lot. And I want to put that on my iPod. I said iPod so Steve knows what I'm talking about. So the Hawks, okay, what do they do? Here's how I'm going to spin it. We all knew once Stan Bowman went on every podcast, including mine for some reason, that he was going to be around, that he was going to be in a position of power. And if you didn't think so after that, you were kidding yourself. So I had sort of already dealt with that reality that, okay, well, whatever this is, Stan Bowman's still in charge. So if you're trying to find a silver lining to promoting Stan Bowman after years of incompetence, what you can say is now you have created a ton of accountability for him. There's no more excuse. There's no one else to blame. You can't sort of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say, well, maybe John McDonough made me do that, right? Those days are over. If hockey operations fail, the president of hockey operations should no longer be employed, right? Isn't that sort of the... That's sort of how I'm seeing it is, okay, you know what, Stan? You've said over and over again that you've got this vision, that people are on board. Let's see it. Now you are fully in charge without, beyond any shadow of a doubt, the power structure is what it is. You are your own boss. So let's see it. Now, the only fear I have is if things don't go well, I guess being the director of hockey operations or the president, whatever, he can say, you know what? This was too much of a workload for me to do GM and president, so I'm going to hire a GM for under me, and then that will buy him more time. But I don't know. I was air quotes on board with the plan he sold this offseason as long as he sticks to it. So let's see. Now he's got a chance. He's in full power. Let's see it work out.
Jay, in theory, you're right. This is the same family, although the different king wearing the crown. This is the same family that worried about the bottom line in every stance and didn't even want to win the Stanley Cup because it was too expensive when Rocky's dad was in charge and Bob Pulford was the exchequer of the fiefdom. And so Stan Bowman can always point to, well, look what money we made, or where there wasn't money. We didn't spend money on the GM. We didn't do any of this. This looks less driven by winning than simply by money. And I understand whatever they're losing, and they might have been losing during the winning years. I understand that. But this seems a financial decision if there ever was one. You agree?
Well,
not agree?
I sort of disagree because, first of all, nothing Rocky has done since the day he took over has indicated he's worried about spending on the team. They've sought free agents, they've signed their own guys to ludicrous contract extensions that they can't move. And, you know, converse what you just said, whatever money they saved by making Stan Bowman the president of hockey ops, they probably spent by hiring Jamie Faulkner to be the president of business operations. So that money was spent, even though it wasn't on the hockey side necessarily. Mm-hmm. I like the separation. I don't think Jamie Faulkner is going to be tapping on Stan Bowman's door saying, hey, Brandon Hagel's playing really well in Rockford, you should call him up. That's not going to happen. That interference isn't going to happen. So I like the separation. They spent the money to divide the two operations. So I think that's good. I don't have any evidence that anything Rocky has done or Danny in his short time as interim president and now CEO, it doesn't feel like the Bill/Arthur Wirtz days where they're trying to pinch every penny they can. I think that there are some realities that because of the pandemic, they're losing a lot of money on ticket sales, and more importantly for the Wirtz family, the beverage sales, right? So all those, and no one's going to feel bad for a billionaire. I sure as hell don't, being the crazy liberal I am. But it is a business, and they're losing money. But I haven't seen anything to indicate this offseason that they're concerned about money. And you might say, well, they didn't bring back Corey Crawford. Okay, fine. I could see that. But they're still up against the cap. They've still got to sign Dylan Strome. And I think they will. So they're going to be right up against the cap again. So they're spending all the money they can on the hockey team, I think. So I'm not, as far as the financial commitment goes, that's not a huge concern of mine.
Jay, as you said correctly, I mean, now Stan Bowman has all power. It's his show. They fail. He fails. But it sounds like for now, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stan Bowman is going to be allowed to fail for right now, as in it looks like this is about development. And while it was really fun beating Edmonton last year and getting into the playoffs and then losing to Las Vegas, this is a rebuilding phase, right?
Yeah, I think, look, this is very scientific, and you can ask all the scientists in the world. I ran a poll on the Madhouse Podcast Twitter account. what percentage of Hawks fans were on board with a rebuild? And it was like 75%. Hawks wow. fans understand that the time, you know, the cost of being great for a decade is there's going to be a little downside while you rebuild. I think fans are on board with that. And the good news is, yes, this is a rebuild, Mark, and that's what it should be. But a lot of your big pieces are already here. Kirby Dach is 19. Adam Boqvist is 19. Alex DeBrincat's 22. Dylan Strome is 23. I think Ian Mitchell, who's supposed to come up and contribute day one, is, I think he's 21. So you've got a really good, solid foundation of young players that are already at the NHL level. So it's not like a total from scratch rebuild like a lot of clubs have to do. They lucked into that number 3 overall pick in Kirby Dach. It looks like they knocked it out of the park. And look, if we're going to criticize Stan Bowman, no one wanted him to pick Kirby Dach. No one. And he did, and the kid was really, really good. And he was maybe the best Blackhawk in the playoffs. He was just named the captain of Team Canada for the World Junior Championship. So this kid's got a huge future, and they went outside what a lot of people thought they should do and picked him. And so far, it looks like a really solid pick.
And Kirby Dach is playing on the wing there. I'm never sure where he's gonna play, but the lines for the World Juniors, their first practice up in Edmonton, I just saw they've got Dach on the wing. And you're right, he was a bigger player. That's what a second year guy looks like. He came back for the playoffs, and he looked like the guy who went from his freshman year to his sophomore year. He looked bigger, stronger, smarter. That's there's hope there, no question. And
the other thing to remember about him, sorry to interrupt you, Steve. No. The other thing to remember is he did not have a training camp. He participated in that rookie tournament in Traverse City before the season and got concussed and missed the entire training camp. So his first time on the ice as a Blackhawk was game one of the season. So he didn't have the preseason to sort of work himself into game speed, into game shape. He just took the ice and went. And you saw, you know, there were those flashes early on, but there was no sustained, consistent contributions from him. Whatever he did from the stoppage in March until the resumption of play in the fall, it was a night and day. It was a night and day change. He was a dominant force. He was killing penalties as a 19-year-old. The last guy I remember doing that is Jonathan Toews. Like, that's kind of unheard of in the NHL. So the arrow is pointed way up for Kirby Dach, and if he can somehow ascend to superstar level, which I don't think is out of the question. Maybe he's not a generational type like Patrick Kane, but if he could be a number one center for the next 10 years, you've got a big piece of that next foundation already in place. And look, you've seen Alex DeBrincat score 40 goals already. He had a down year last year, but he was probably the most effective he's ever been at all ends of the ice. The puck just wasn't going in for him. That'll correct. He'll get those goal numbers back up. There's a lot of things to be optimistic about. I know it feels tough and it feels like it's really far away, but when you look at the prospects the Hawks have, they're going to lose a lot of games, but they're going to be developing these young players in game situations as they should be. The only thing I don't like is the goaltending situation, because I feel like you're going to have the Hawks playing well some nights, you know, and then they're going to lose like 6-5 because the goalies are unproven and we don't know if they're good or not. So that's my big concern.
Jay, Danny Wirtz is the CEO officially. Jamie Faulkner, as you mentioned, president of business operations. How will that duo be different than what John McDonough did with the Blackhawks?
I think that remains to be seen. I think John McDonough is a unique personality in this town, and I think as he was around more, people started hearing about what John's really like, and he's, you know, a lot of people will have horror stories about the way he treats employees. Some employees thrive under those scenarios. It's like a football coach. Some players like to be pushed. Some players like to be trusted. It's just a different style. I think you bring in someone significantly younger than John McDonough, someone who has not really worked in sports before, and someone who comes in without the established profile of John. Like, John McDonough was a celebrity when he was hired for his status with the Cubs, and he was a public figure. Jamie Faulkner is not yet a public figure. Maybe she will be in a year or so as her, you know, position with the Hawks becomes more forward-facing and we get to see more of what she does on a day-to-day basis. But I don't think she comes in with the established power that John McDonough just sort of brought with him. And we got to remember, too, like, when he came in, he was, you know, quote-unquote the savior. He was the brilliant marketing mind that had these outrageous ideas to put games on TV and pay for good players. Like the revolutionary John McDonough system of broadcasting your games. You know what I mean? So he came in with this sort of aura about him. I don't know if Jamie Faulkner comes in with that. And that's not a criticism. I think it's a really good hire. I think it's an inspired hire. But I just think it doesn't have that. And I think this is a good thing. I want to be clear. It's a good thing that she comes in without that. Oh my gosh, that's John McDonough. That's Jamie Faulkner. Nope, she's there to do her job. I'm confident she's going to do a good job. And I very much say it again, love that hockey and business are clearly separated. There is no more blurring of that line. Hockey is here. Business is here. It worked for the Cubs with Theo and,
Crane Kenny.
Yeah. I mean, think about the way people thought of Crane Kenny before Theo got here.
Yep.
Right? Like, he interferes, he's trying to do what he wants to do, and then Theo got here and was like, nope, that won't be happening. Right? Like, this is my thing, not yours, and I will handle this, and you handle this, and that was sort of the end of it. And I think the Cubs did well to have that separation. So, I don't know, maybe it's just my hockey itch needing to be scratched that I have this a little bit more optimism about this season than most people do and about these hires, but I don't know. I'm feeling kind of good about the direction of the Hawks, even though, you know, the standings will probably be not beautiful next year. That's probably a good thing. Get these guys playing time. In the meantime, you get a pretty decent draft pick that can help you sooner rather than later. And when you're ready to compete, you've already got a really nice core built. And that's what happened. People forget when Taves and Kane arrived, you had Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith, who had been toiling in obscurity for years. They were hitting their prime as those two guys came, so everything jived perfectly. Hopefully, that can be the same situation with this new generation of Hawks.
Talking with Jay Zawoski of the Score of the Madhouse podcast and of the Big 50, the new book that is out and right to be purchased for Christmas. It's the perfect Christmas gift for the hockey fan there. So, Jay, I still have a question about this season coming on, but as long as we're talking about your book, and it was a lot of fun, and it were some terrific memories, terrific people involved, and you're scratched a lot of Hawks itches, where and how can people get it?
Well, you can get it anywhere books are sold. You know, it's on Amazon, it's on all those places, it's in your local bookstore. And I always try to ask people, if at all possible, to support local and independent booksellers, because they're small businesses, they need help now more than they ever have before, and even before they needed help. So my favorite is Bookies. So you can go to bookiesbookstores.com to place an order there. If you'd like a signed, personalized copy, I'm selling some on my own. It's madhousepod.com/book. It's probably too late to get them in time for Christmas at this point because the postal service is just slammed right now and things are taking a little longer than usual. But if you want to print out, hey, you have this coming for whoever you want to gift the book to, or if you want to get it for yourself, madhousepod.com/book, you fill out that form and then I will put in there whatever you want me to and send it off from my little post office in my basement.
Okay, so that being the case, and I recommend the book, like I said, it was a lot of fun. The NHL is going to attempt to go ahead with this season, and they are attempting to create four divisions that will be different than you've seen before. Mostly, first and foremost, there will be an all-Canadian division, if they can get the people in British Columbia to agree to that, and they don't seem likely to go along with it. But there's in which case, if they can't get all the provinces to agree, then they may end up with the Canadian teams in the United States, like we see the Raptors in Tampa. And so as it stands, the first proposal has the Hawks in a division with the defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay, the runner-up Dallas, Columbus with John Tortorella, Florida with Joel Quenneville, Carolina with Rod Brind'Amour and Teuvo Teravainen. And I'm sorry to break your heart that way, Jay, but we are at a point where the Hawks and Detroit appear to be the bottom feeders and have the two worst coaches in that division, or not.
Yeah, you could probably say that. I mean, they're the bottom feeders for sure. The coaches thing, you've got a lot of proven coaches in the Central Division featuring Florida. I think that's fair to say. But like we've been saying, this is a good thing. Get them out there against good competition. And at the end of the year, if you have a lottery pick, that's not the end of the world, right? It's a good thing. You know what? The one thing I am kind of happy about is to have Detroit in the conference again, or in the division again, for a season, because that rivalry, I miss that. That used to, you know, make my blood boil more than anything. And now that they're in the East, they're just kind of another team. It just, they only play a couple times a year. And I don't know. I would like meaningful games against Detroit to come back somehow. And I know they won't be, well, maybe they'll be meaningful in the race for the last pick, for the first overall pick. So I guess that's meaningful. But I don't know. I'm happy to see the Red Wings back on the Hawks schedule more often. But yeah, it's gonna be difficult. Look, however the divisions would have aligned, even in your traditional Central Division, the Hawks would have had a tough time too. It's a really strong top-to-bottom division. I mean, they don't have to play the Blues this year. I guess that's good, right? Because we know St. Louis is on the West Coast.
Yes, and so is Minnesota.
Yeah.
Minnesota's on the West Coast of the Mississippi.
Right, right. So, look, I am a fan of chaos as long as no one's dying from chaos. Yeah. So this is going to be a lot of fun for me. I'm really looking forward to it. 56 games, it's going to fly by, and I cannot wait. I hope that the 13th is the day it works out. I think Canada will find a way to make hockey happen. I feel like they might like it up there a little bit more than they like basketball, so they might suspend disbelief long enough to find a way to make it work. But look, man, I just drop the puck. I just want to watch hockey. The other night I was sitting around and Hope said to me, "What do you want to watch?" I'm like, "You know what I want to watch? I want to watch Blackhawks hockey. It's cold outside. It's December. I should be watching hockey right now." Yeah. And I kind of got like a mini rant about how I can't watch hockey. She's like, "We'll put on an old game." I'm like, "You're a genius." So I watched. I literally did. This is the saddest thing you're ever going to hear in the history of the score. I watched a Hawks Colorado game from December so I could scout new Hawks defenseman Nikita Zadorov.
Well,
we'll look for that that insight on a future Madhouse podcast.
Yeah,
right.
He was assigned Patrick Kane that night and did a damn fine job. I have to say, I was impressed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
That all said, real quick, I know we'll let you go.
Bears. Yeah, is that it?
Bears.
Yeah, of course. Hey, what's the Northwestern score? Is Northwestern losing?
Have they started?
No, we're not.
Yeah, started 7-3.
Sorry, college.
We don't cover amateur
despicable.
Sports.
Despicable. Yeah. I hate those people. They're despicable.
Yeah,
Jay,
before I let you go. Oh, they're winning.
They're up 7-3.
Before I let you go, Jay, we know Bears. We also need to Bears. Add to your. We need to mention as part of your vast or half-assed portfolio, Bears. It includes the. The I'm Fat podcast. So can I run an idea by you that I made? It was my Hanukkah. I made a latke burger where I took some Trader Joe's latkes, made them extra crisp, and used them as buns on a hamburger with like blue cheese and tomato and the burger. So go.
I mean, you throw a tomato out, but wow, that is inspired.
Oh, good.
How did you
plan
that?
You were just going to vomit all over me.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Absolutely not. That sounds terrific.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
Did you hold it in your hand or did you cut it up?
No, I held it in the hand. And the problem is here's an expert pro tip. Yeah. If you don't make two of them and don't make them too thick, because when you use like 80-20, which is where all the flavor is and the fat.
Yeah.
It sits on it and it just bleeds into the bottom, and then you don't have a crisp latke anymore. So flat flatten them out and then make them one at a time, because that way you don't have them go all soft. They don't completely fall apart from all the fat dripping on them. So you get the crispness of the latke as the bun that you want. That's my pro tip.
I like that. What if you were to make it big, like a big, like one big latke, and eat it like a taco? Would that prevent, or it would probably snap in half if you had it too crispy, right?
It might. I've not done that. I guess you could fold the problem. The reason I would prefer like Trader Joe's is because they make them, and whatever size they are, they are.
Oh, right.
If you
make your
own latkes, your house will stink of onions for the entire length of Hanukkah till next Hanukkah. And your walls will be dripping in oil as you fry the latkes. So I'm trying to save you potato pancake madness, and you have a year of latkes on your walls.
All right. Well, that's, I think, right. It's an inspired idea. And look, the first time you try something, it's not necessarily going to work out. My New Year's resolution is to perfect a chili verde salsa. I tried it first, and it was good. But I need to roast the tomatillos and the peppers a little bit longer. And I did not pre-roast the garlic or the onions. I need to do that too. So next batch, you learn from your mistakes and you adapt. So, Steve, I'm confident.
Roasted garlic. Okay. I'm confident that
by next Hanukkah, you will have this recipe down.
All right. Cannot wait for the traditional Hanukkah recipe of chili verde. Terrific. All right.
All right.
Jay, thanks for your time.
Thanks. Anytime. I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right. Jay. That's Jay Zawoski, The Big 50. Any bookstore, call Bookies. They'll have it for you. Bookies and Homewood. It's a terrific book for Blackhawks fans. So we got to take a break. When we come back, stuff. I don't know. This is Saturday Suckage. We've completely blown up the clock, but that's what Saturday Suckage is for. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde. Thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. All right. We will just let you know two things. One is, the Bears get some good injury news for tomorrow's game, ahead of tomorrow's game. And the Bulls had somebody show up surprisingly last night. So we will discuss all that in the next hour. And also, what Mark heard. That's coming up. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.